Hi everyone, I'm Justin Chisholm and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast. My guest this time is the world-renowned American yachtsman Ken Reed. As well as winning 9 world championship titles, taking part in multiple campaigns in the America's Cup and the Ocean Race, Ken has skippered iconic race boats like the record-setting 100-footer Comanche and the stunning J-class Hanneman. Aside from all of that sailing, he also happens to have one of the best jobs in yachting as the president of the global North Sails empire. And in his spare time, well, kind of, he has also done a fantastic job providing expert commentary at the last 2 editions of the America's Cup. So who better then to take stock of the current professional yacht racing scene? As you'll hear from our chat, it was pretty wide-ranging, from the impacts of COVID-19 on professional yacht racing and the business of sailing, to the increasing popularity of double-handed sailing, the upcoming start of the Vendée Globe, his thoughts on the Ocean Race, Sail GP, the America's Cup, and quite a few other topics too. I had great fun recording it, and I hope you enjoy listening. Ken Reed, welcome to the Yacht Racing Podcast. I'm delighted to finally get you on here. Been looking forward to this for a little while. Let's start by setting the scene. I'm here in Mallorca, where we are feeling like we're just about to go into a Spanish lockdown. Tell the listeners where you are right now.
Hey, Justin, thanks for having me, first of all. Yeah, I'm in Newport, Rhode Island. It's been an odd year. I spent half of my life typically on a plane, going from event to event or client to client. And this year has been literally none of that. So I'm here in Newport. We're not in lockdown yet. I think as we found out in the spring, we're probably a few weeks behind Europe for some completely godforsaken reason with regards to this incredible disaster that the world is dealing with. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get a little nudge of a lockdown a little earlier this time, hopefully. And hopefully people have learned that this is no joke and quit screwing around and getting out in public and not taking this seriously. So I don't know if that'll ever happen.
Well, it's a problem the world over for sure in terms of that attitude of some people at least. You're sitting there in Newport. It's one of the world's sailing capitals, renowned for its reputation for racing. How has the pandemic affected the city from a sailing point of view? Because normally in the summer, the place is just racing everywhere. You look every corner you go around, there's another fleet racing.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, it's really been fascinating in a way. This is the summer that has given rise, a re-rise, let's call it, to local sailing. And there's been more local racing out of yacht clubs than I've ever seen before. I've done more local sailing on Narragansett Bay this summer than I have in the past 10 years combined. And by the way, it's been really fun. That side of it has been terrific. And it's also given rise to different types of racing. There's different races. There's a lot of point-to-point stuff that's happened. It's well documented that I jumped into the double-handed side of the world and I'm not going back. I love it. I absolutely loved it. It not only got me sailing in a completely different style of boat and style of crew, but got me sailing with people like Susie Leach and my brother Brad and I, who had an absolute ball in the double-handed races that we did together. So, the New York Yacht Club was pretty much shut down all summer. So a lot of their racing didn't happen until very late in the fall. But Sail Newport, on the other hand, and as the biggest youth trainer, figured out a system to get tons of kids through there still and get a lot of racing off, albeit it wasn't world championships, but it just everything had that local flavor. And you know what, it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, I guess sailing could have been one of the sports there that the kids were able to do, because I think a lot of the other kind of traditional ball sports and team sports had been well shut down, hadn't they?
Yeah, and they did their due diligence, and my brother Brad Reed run Sail Newport and has for a number of years, and they took it very seriously. They're you know, we always joke with Brad, he's running for governor at some stage. He has had to really get affiliated with the government agencies around here. So not only has that helped sailing, but it also helped him for sure, and his staff prepare for how to deal with kids and their parents and do youth events and just keep the momentum going. But yeah, and the other part of it, that forget racing for a second, but also day sailing and cruising. I mean, you see more day sailors and cruisers out than I think we ever saw in the past, and people use their boats. What a concept.
That's interesting you say that, because here on the island, one of the things we think we saw in the bay was that when the lockdown did finish, although all the charter boats weren't here because nobody was allowed to charter, what we saw were all the local boats coming out from the marina, because I think people have been locked up for so long and said, oh, you know, we have a boat in the marina we never use, and we should, when this is all over, we should get it out. And they were, and it was just great to see people going out and enjoying their boats here and filling the bay up with much smaller boats than normal. We normally see the big stuff here as well. But it was nice to see. I wanted to ask you about your...
I hope that continues, by the way. I really do. I hope people have figured out how fun sailing is again.
Exactly. No, I think that is going to be one of the knock-on effects. I wanted to just ask you a little bit about that. You mentioned that you've been doing lots of kind of local racing there. So typically in Newport, for the people who haven't been to Newport, what would that racing be? What sort of boats are you racing?
Well, you mean the local side compared to in the past? Well, it's, you know, I spent a lot of time in a Jeannot Sunfast 3300 this summer, you know, and sailing with my buddy down the street has this classic 30 footer that we did a bunch of PHRF sailing. My brother Brad has a, you know, 40 something foot cruising boat, old cruising boat. Just, I think PHRF racing, I guess the best way to qualify it is PHRF racing. And that's, you know, that's kind of our local handicap system. And just about all the racing this summer was PHRF. And that really does, that kind of pigeonholes the type of sailing that you're talking about when you talk about the handicap system. So yeah, no elaborate, fancy handicap rules, VPPs, everything else, just all of us yelling at our local PHRF handicap guy, telling him that we're all getting ripped off. I'm sure he had the busiest summer of his life. A guy named Will Musler, I should give him a shout out. I told him at one stage this summer that I thought he had the hardest job in America.
It sounds like it. It sounds like but, it.
No, it's just PHRF racing. And just looked around. You know, I kind of have a vantage point. I'm all up the other end of the island from Newport, and I look at Bristol Yacht Club and Tiverton Yacht Club from this area. And on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights, there's pods of lots of sailing going on all over the place around the bay. And you know, Newport has a couple of a Tuesday night series and a Wednesday night series. Barrington, you know, East Greenwich, Wickford, just out in their local communities, actually doing fun beer can racing again with their buddies. And again, it brought back a sense of family and friendship, I think. And that's good. That's good. We needed it. We needed that shot in the arm.
That's great to hear. Now, Ken, I also wanted you to put your business hat on, put your North Sails cap on, because your job title is, if I get this right, President of North Sails and Executive Vice President of the North Sails Technology Group. First of all, how do those two businesses fit together? How does that work?
Well, North Sails technically is part of NTG, North Technology Group, and North Technology Group is essentially the umbrella over Edgewater Power Boats and Southern Spars and Hall Spars and Future Fibers, North Kiteboarding or North Action Sports, as we call it now. Magic Marine is another one of our brands. So Mystic, Magic, I'm probably forgetting. Hall Spars? I can't forget Hall Spars. So we do a little bit of everything with all those companies. Guy named Richard Lott works in it full time, and I especially get into it a bit with the Future Fibers and the Southern Spars and Hall Spars guys and girls. So yeah, But I would say still 80% of my time is taking. Oh, and actually, don't forget the apparel side. The apparel side is taking up probably more and more. Not just the fashion North Sales fashion side, but the new performance side. A guy named Nigel Musto, who you may recognize his last name.
Yeah, we know that name.
Came to work for us 2 years ago, and just created a proper performance line of product, including three different types of weather gear. I mean, when the world sees this, and it's going to be out, and it's going to be launched shortly. But when the world sees it come April, this is going to blow people away. How good this stuff, how different and good this stuff is for the future. So that's very exciting too. So that's the NTG side. The North Sales side again takes up 80% of my time still, and that's everything from managing certain segments of the brand, formulating the executive committee, who have had to make some brutally hard and different decisions over this past year, and obviously answering to Oakley, our owner, our ownership group. So it's really this has been obviously been a year that nobody could have anticipated, we could have expected. Some of the questions early on, especially back in March, that we were asking each other, to be frank, half of them were throwing up our hands saying, who the hell knows? To be really honest, these were decisions and problems that needed solutions that were coming up on a daily basis that none of us had ever considered before. Fortunately, we have a great ownership group who was not only supportive, they were partners in the whole thing and really kind of helped us navigate through this whole thing with all of our companies. So, and then thirdly, from a commercial standpoint, we made the decision early on that there was going to be very little racing this year. So because of that, we really switched everything right away to a cruising product company, and North Sales has never been looked at, but within a month and a half, we had an entirely new 3DI cruising product line launch, which usually would take a year to do, that we did in miraculous time. And it has, well, it would probably be a little too strong to say it saved the company, but our cruising sale performance has blown away any year in the past this year because we made a concerted effort. And thank goodness we did, because Lord knows there was no real Grand Prix racing. And Grand Prix racing has always been this company's bread and butter.
Yeah, it's been a difficult time, hasn't it, for the pro circuits like the TP52 Super Series, RC44s, the Maxis, the Grand Prix classes, I guess we'd call them. Virtually no racing at all this year. It's one of the reasons you've not been on a plane quite as much, I'm guessing. It's not an easy time to be a professional sailor, is it?
Yeah, I talk to tons of pro sailors and I just kind of check in from time to time. And I think a lot of them who want to have found something, especially as the summer went along. I think in some areas, some states, some parts of this country, I'm not sure about other countries, they've figured out how to kind of get on the dole a little bit on the PPP program and help themselves out there. Some of them have rebuilt houses. Some of them, I was joking the other day, that divorce lawyers are probably the busiest people in the United States right now because of having to stay together so much. But I think most have figured out their way how to navigate through there too at the same time. And you know what? Pro sailors are a pretty pretty smart bunch, and they're hardly regarded in their field for a reason, because they know how to kind of navigate through situations. And this was just another situation to navigate through. Looks like we're in for maybe another little bumpy ride for hopefully a short term, but kind of like pro sailors, kind of like the rest of the world, North Sales, we're kind of managing for a vaccine. We've in a sense resized our company. And I think pro sailors have kind of resized their intake, that, you know, what they're going to be getting out there in the marketplace, and had to make adjustments accordingly. So, you know what? Welcome to the real world. Everybody has to do it.
And when you speak, as you probably do, to the owners of these large boats, these are kind of expensive programs, the leaders of them, they tend to be business people, you know, successful business people in their own right, just to be able to afford to run these programs. I mean, these are very smart people who've built very successful businesses and run successful professional campaigns. What do they tell you? What sense do you have that they're expecting to be back next year, or not next year, the following year, or right. are any of them saying, you know what, I'm going to go skiing instead?
Well, I think in the short, so Justin, that's a great question. I actually haven't been asked that before, but the fascinating answer is that there's two answers to that. It's either I'm shutting down my life, I'm not taking any chances, to I could absolutely give a crap and I'm going to live my life as if nothing was wrong. And I'm going sailing if I want to go sailing. There is nobody in between. There's nobody like, I'm going to think about this. Literally, very, very few people I came by. So, you know, it kind of depends on age. It depends on health. So obviously the older and the precondition, any sort of preconditions, is just a natural human instinct that, hey, I'm taking this super cautious and literally shutting it down for as long as I have to. This is my pastime. This is my playtime. But I would say anybody that didn't fit into those two categories did their best to get back out on the water. And even if it took all summer long to finally kind of nudge out there on the water at the end of the fall, they did. But again, it was really polar opposites of what the views were. How can you even imagine, even like, you know, local yacht clubs versus the New York Yacht Club. The New York Yacht Club took a complete left side approach, essentially shut down, super cautious. And by the way, there's no right answer, clearly. No right answer to any of these things. So that was their decision, and God bless them. Whereas some of the yacht clubs opened their doors in early May, just like they always do. You know, no social gatherings, but so really, really, those polar opposites have been, if there's one thing that's been consistent, it's been that kind of polar opposite thinking.
Interesting. Now, let's talk a little bit about something you mentioned a few minutes ago in passing, which was this upsurge, which I've noticed and was noticing even before COVID, in the double-handed, the interest in double-handed two-up sailing, short-handed racing. You've been quite a big proponent of it. I was interested to see, and I think you mentioned it earlier, you did some racing, I think, in Florida, which I was very interested. So tell me what your experience of this has been. It sounded like you were you weren't put off by it and you really liked it.
I'd say that's probably an understatement. I think it has revitalized my career, first of all. To get to kind of the end of the story first, this has kind of brought back my love for sailing. So let's go back to the beginning. Obviously, the Olympic announcement for 2024 got a lot of people scratching their heads. And by no means did that event being announced have any bearing, really, on me becoming a double-handed sailor, because I don't know if I would ever even try for the Olympics. I don't know if I've had the time. I don't know if I could create the time. But what it did do is it spurred a bunch of boats that all of a sudden were being built for double-handed sailing in that size range, in kind of that 28 to 35 foot size range. And there's a half a dozen boats that, first of all, what I learned this summer is when a boat is built to be a single or double hander like that, it is incredibly fun to sail with one or two people. And by the way, it's not so great to sail with six, you know, up to four, maybe four, you know, some shorthanded, but it's really built for one or two people. So I tripped over this Jeannot Sunfast 3300 through Jeannot North America, became good buddies with a couple people that work there. And we just kind of worked. They said, hey, we got this demo boat. And I said, well, I'll go try it. Why not? And it was really kind of started that simply. And it was the Fort Lauderdale to Key West race because they had the boat down in Florida. Or actually, it was in Annapolis, and they just got it down to Florida. And we did it, and we loved it. And Susie, you know, I chose Susie because she lives here close to in town, in Jamestown, and obviously has a seriously good resume. You know, she was the bow. She did the bow on Mighty Mary, you know, in Bill Koch's America's Cup program in 95. So that means she's crazy, first of all. She's fully nuts. And which lived out. Absolutely. I say it with all fondness. She's crazy. And we got along great. And she brought some navigation skills to the, and some certainly some boat handling skills. And I brought a little preparation and boat speed skills to it. And, you know, we kind of hit it off. Now, let's fast forward to the summer. And they decided, well, let's bring the boat up to where we are. And as COVID hit, it looked like double-handed sailing was going to keep going. And so we planned 4 or 5 events this summer, you know, Ida Lewis distance race, the New England solo twin, and then a couple kind of shorter regional type style races around here. And we just got into it. All of a sudden I had a boat to play with in the evenings. I'd go down and putz around with it. And I had a boat to tinker with and sail with my brother, who is completely opposite skill set from Susie, because I really wanted to kind of see the difference. Which really opened my eyes between Susie's skill set and my brother's skill set. So anyway, I'm making a short story long here. It absolutely was a blast. And sailing a little boat again was fun. Prepping a little boat, you know, understanding, practicing, trying to figure out some new tricks, you know, teach this old dog new tricks. It was hilarious. At times it was hilarious. It was like, this is so fun and exhilarating and just different that I can't wait to do more of it, frankly.
And I guess there's no place to hide, is there, when there's just two of you on the boat?
A mistake is magnified. You know, that was always my big theme with both of them. If we got a good jump and got out into the front pack, and you know, the pack starts to thin pretty quickly in a double-handed race. And by the way, for all the right reasons, because some people are there just to have the adventure and some people are there to race. And then there's another group that are kind of halfway in between, depending on the condition. We were there to race. So the pack would kind of move off into our, and it would just not make the big mistake because everybody's dropping kites in the water and everybody's flipping over and everybody's, you know, just making dumb tactical decisions. All of us, including ourselves, when you start getting tired. And these were, for the most part, kind of 24 to 30 hour races. So you can't sleep. So you're really tired. In a 24 to 30 hour race, there's really no time, no room to sleep. So, you know, come that next day, you're making some kind of goofy moves. And our whole goal was just let's minimize the big mistake. Sure enough, you know, people are coming back in with, you know, they're running kites and pieces and, you know, lost their jib overboard and, you know, forgot to jibe and missed an island. I mean, crazy stuff, which again, makes it hilarious, fun, really fun.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think there was, even before the COVID thing hit, I think there was this, just this, I don't know, I guess there's a bunch of people who, you hear it regularly about owners who are like, oh, I need to organize a crew and it's a lot of hassle and people are unreliable. And so if you can go race your boat with two people, that seems like a simpler way of doing it. But do you have to buy one of these new double-handed boats or can you go and race your J35?
Well, that's the beauty of it. So we're racing against, you know, really well-sailed Express 37s and Pearson 36s and old anybody can, with a couple little tweaks, can help adapt their boat to double-handed. So isn't it an advantage to have one of these modern boats that are suited for it? Yeah, of course it is. So there's always a better, better tool to use in your tool belt. So, but you don't have to. I mean, down at Long Island Sound, they've been doing this for a long time, or even around here for a long time. And it's almost all adapted boats. So they did a nice, one thing they did, Justin, and I'm seeing this more and more, race committees around the world aren't separating classes by length or handicap anymore, but boat type. So the boats that could kind of pop and plane, you know, at a certain wind speed, we're all sailing in one division, and then the more displacement style boats are sailing in another division. And by the way, that's exactly the right way to do it. So if two 30 footers are not made equal. And so for race committees around the world, boat type is a far better way to separate divisions than either handicap or boat length. And fortunately around here, they caught on to that, and it made the, I think they made the racing fun for everybody.
So it sounds like you're hooked. I'm not going to let your faint damning of the idea of the Olympics pass by without just pushing you a little bit on it. So that's, I don't think that's completely off the table. If US Sailing came to you and said, Kenny, we're thinking we need you to come and put something together for an Olympic campaign, what would you do?
Well, so I've done one bit of preparation for this. I've looked it up, and I would not be the oldest Olympian in history. But, you know, I would be, it wouldn't be easy, but, you know, I'm gonna keep pursuing this double-handed thing. Where it goes, nobody knows. So as the old saying goes, but never say no to anything. But at the same time, I got a day job, you know, so my day job always has to win out. Now, the beauty of a lot of these things, and it's why I might have the best day job in the world, is I can mix my pleasure with business. And so by doing this double-handed thing, I think hopefully this was the goal, was to start raising awareness that there's other types of sailing out there that is really fun. So don't get bogged down in the same old stuff and get bored. There are other things. It may not be double-handed sailing, but there's plenty of other things out there that can revitalize your interest in the sport. And this has, like I said in the outset, this has brought back my love for sailing like I couldn't have imagined. I'm really, and by the way, you talked about logistics. Remember, last couple racing programs that I organized were Comanche and Hanneman, both for the Clarks. And, you know, one was Hanneman, you had to organize about 32 people. And that doesn't include the shore team. And same with Comanche, was about 20, somewhere around 20 plus a shore team. So, man, calling up one person and saying, you want to go sailing? It's a beautiful thing. Two peanut butter sandwiches. That's all. You know, it's a beautiful, I can't tell you how that is.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. And possibly the most contrived segue in the world from two peanut butter sandwiches to only one. Let's talk about the Vendée Globe, which we know is about to start. We're about a week away from it. As we're recording this, I don't know if you've tuned into it yet, but the race village in Le Sable d'Olonne has been closed because of the French lockdown. But the start of the race right now is still going ahead. They seem pretty adamant on that, which I think everybody will be pleased, because for heaven's sake, we need something to watch over the next few weeks if we do end up getting locked down. And this could be one of the most exciting races yet, I think. A whole bunch of new foiling boats and some pretty interesting skippers. How do you see it?
Well, so we as sailors, I think racing sailors, and we as North Sails are so fully invested in this. This is fascinating stuff. This is crazy stuff. This is new world stuff. And Loic Perron is doing a multi-part series for us at North Sails, kind of going through the history right up through the current current evolution of what these boats have turned into. And that is fascinating in its own right. So we at North Sails, you know, I think 75% of the fleet is using our product, which we're very, very proud of. Very, very proud of at all of our folks in North Sails France, who are clearly invested beyond belief in events like this. So I was hoping when I got up this morning and read about France and the lockdown, that was my immediate, like, oh, please, God, don't cancel the Vendée Globe, because it is something that our sport needs. Between that and the America's Cup, I think we're on to, hopefully, a bit of entertainment that none of us have ever witnessed before. And we as sailors and we in the industry kind of need that. We all humans need their own boost. And those of us who love sailing can use this as our little boost, as our happy place to go every day, as our, following the Vendée around and following these stories and following these wonderful personalities and these crazy boats. And how can you not like it? You know, how can you not be fascinated?
Crazy boats is right. I mean, I'm my mind is just in a spin about them. And the more I talk to people who know about them, the more extreme they seem to me. I spoke to Ryan Braemeyer about foil designs for an article I'm going to put on the Yacht Racing Life website. And we got onto the holes and, and he said, like, all of the impacts are on the back of the boat now. So that's where everything has to be super, super strong, because unlike the Volvo 70s that used to go down off the ski ramp and then land kind of flat, these boats are constantly just pumping up and down on the back quarter of the boat. Yeah. Life on board must be, you haven't sailed one of these boats, have you, or have you?
No, Charlie Enright had his boat here in town for the last couple of months, and they did a little bit of training. And the unfortunate part was I was planning on doing some sailing with them, and they snapped a board off soon after they got here. So their testing program and the amount of sailing they did really suffered, obviously, because of it. There's not much testing you can do there with one board with any efficiency at all. But Charlie and I are close. We work together. His affiliation with North Sails and for years, I've been kind of the older brother, sounding board, at least for him. I think he's successful because he rarely has taken my advice, but at least he does me the service of asking every once in a while. So anyway, I've just, once they did their last transatlantic crossing, like, Charlie, this looks kind of crazy. He's like, any boat that you have to wear a helmet down below, not up on deck, but down below, that gives you an idea of how violent these boats are. And there's no, multi-hulls have kind of that sketchy feel sometimes, right? This is a no rhyme or reason wave pattern. You know, in a Volvo 70, violent, but I guess if there's a phrase, predictably violent, Comanche was the same way, kind of predictably violent, it still had a bit of a monohull, even though you're skipping from wave to wave, a bit of a monohull feel to it. This is a different animal. And the more they're closing themselves in, obviously for safety and keeping the water from washing themselves off, the more it's that kind of claustrophobic, no sense of the horizon is taking over. And he said that some really hardened sailors have gotten on the boat and very quickly become seasick.
Yeah.
So because of that no horizon feel to it. So, yeah, as much as we say this is fun, Justin, and how this evolution is really cool, safety is always the number one priority and concern. And, people got to, A, of course, hold on. But B, I just don't want to wake up some morning saying so-and-so has done something catastrophic in the middle of the ocean, hard to be plucked. Because this is a different game altogether. And it's, this is just the beginning of it. There's much more to come. There's no question.
Yeah, for sure. I'm interested. How does you say you're working with a lot of the teams, and it's the French operation there. But how does a sailmaker like North engage with a campaign, say that's building a new boat for the Vendée?
So we
just say that, oh yeah, these guys have got North's.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, so they, I guess they spoke to North and they said, we're doing it. And there's, we don't even think just through that process.
Just told us a set of sales.
Yeah, exactly. But I, obviously there's much more. You must be involved at concept stage, are you?
Yeah. So I wish it was that easy. That's the good old days. Build me a set of sales. Got it. Check, you know, send me a check and I'll give you some sales. Those days are as far behind in the rearview mirror as the days of not foiling. You know, the genie's out of the bottle. The design services are our company. We have companies within the company now who prioritize, have more software than you could possibly imagine, more technical know-how than you could possibly imagine, that not only create the engine above the deck, so that's the marriage of sails and mast and rigging above deck, but now completely integral into the hull shape, the foil position, the center of effort, the mast positioning fore and aft. In essence, we have become part of a really intricate design team for each of these boats. So it really depends. Some of these budgets, it's like when I did the Volvo, some people barely make it around the world and others come in fully stocked for bear to like no stone unturned, right? And we essentially have packages for everything in between. So you want us to start on day one and be an integral part of your program, we can do that. You want to check the box and say, I need a set of sails to get me around the world as durably as possible, we got that checkbox as well. And literally everything in between. We can do a program that is 100% focused on you with exclusive rights to everything we do. Or we can do something that is 100% not exclusive, that everybody who's chosen to go in that direction is all kind of in the same box and in the same mix and all kind of work off of each other. So it really depends on the program. It depends on their funding and it depends on how they want to set the whole project up. But it is more and more becoming a design race of which North Sails design and engineers are fully invested from day number one.
You guys are in a position of trust, aren't you? Because if you've got campaign A and campaign B and both are using your sales, but you know they're fierce competitors, then you know you've got to have a not just a Chinese wall between those design elements in your business so that nothing's being shared, swapped over. I mean, is that how it works?
So that's exactly how it works, but fortunately we have a lot of practice internally. So back into, you know, the cup days, 12 meters, probably not so much, but once we got into the next version, what they call them, version 6 or whatever they were called. Version 5. So once we got into version 5 boats, that's when programs really started going exclusive within North Sails. So really 12 meters were still, somebody chose Sopstead, somebody chose North, somebody chose whoever. It wasn't until kind of 3DL that all of a sudden everybody wanted 3DL, but nobody wanted, everybody assumed that they could do it smarter than the other guy. So that's when the Chinese wall was set up within our system. So there's one person, as the president of the company, I couldn't find out what the differences were between programs or between designs. There's one person, and that's the file processor out in Minden, Nevada. So if you ever want to kidnap somebody, you go straight to Minden and you kidnap the file processor, who is the only person who knows the tape layouts and the mold shapes for each individual team. And that person, by the way, has never been on a sailboat in their life. So that is like ancient Greek to them. So it's really efficient. It has not been ever challenged. It is thorough. It is, in a way, it's our lifeblood. Because if we promise a group that they are exclusive, then we'd better darn be exclusive. Because once that promise was broken, it would be over forever. So we take it as seriously as anything we do.
Yeah, understood. It's good to understand that's how it works. From a practical point of view, the sales that you're building now for these very different boats, they're even so much different from the last generation of 4 years ago. I guess the question I'm trying to ask is, are you building them differently from a shape point of view because the boats are foiling? I mean, how's...
So what you're going to see in this Vendée Globe is an incredible difference in sail profile, in aspect ratios. Some higher aspects, shorter foot, higher aspect. Others, really long foot, triangular, kind of almost old school looking sails. You'll notice that almost everybody's mainsail roach is carved out in the head and gets fatter down low. So the reason for these aspects is they're trying to... The problem with foiling is you need sail area and you need shape to get up on the foil or to get skimming. But as soon as that happens, the apparent wind goes forward, you need, in a perfect world, you'd get rid of half of your sail area right there on the spot and half of the shape. You know, some of these jibs, for example, on the cup boats that are going 45 knots, they're flat. I mean, we could almost mold them on a tennis court. You know, that's how bloody flat they are. So it's really, there's two modes. So it's one reason why 3DI is so good for these guys is it just doesn't stretch and they can very quickly twist and especially with helix sails, use the luff tension to change shape really dramatically, very quickly. But I think you're gonna see more and more low aspect sails. Another feature of these Vendée boats is that the masts are all one design. They're wing one design masts that frankly aren't up to it. They were designed essentially before the boats started popping out of the water, but they decided not to change that. And these guys and girls have to figure out how to manage their sails and manage the stability, because stability, when a boat is loaded up and becomes more stable, that puts more load on the rig, right? So they need to get lower aspect sails in order to take a lot of that compression off the rig. So I think you're going to see more and more low aspect sails here when these people start. And some are going to go around the world with only headsails. Some are still sailing with A2s, you know, with flying sails. It's sailing style. And it's honestly, it's whether you're pursuing like any boat race. There's a small group that thinks they can win. There's a fairly large group that thinks they can be in the top five, top 10. And then there's everybody else. So which group are you in? And that really determines how hard you plan on pushing the boat and what your sail aspect ratio and shaping has to do. So the world is changing so fast. These are all fascinating questions that even 5 years ago, I don't think half of them would have been answered.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly, like my conversation with Ryan Braemar, he said the same thing about the rigs. The rig is the fuse, basically. If you push too hard, you know, the boat doesn't fall over, the rig comes down. Yeah. And he said there's a lot of load sensing technology and alarms on the top boats to prevent the rig from being overdriven.
So, by the way, those alarms are just going off all the time and you eventually go down and either clip the wire or you just shut them off.
Oh, I remember that from the Volvo days. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And from a durability point of view, is foiling, these new foiling boats, are they tougher on the sails or less tough on the sails? Or is it just...
I think it's the same. It's you build a sail, especially using 3DI, for a specific apparent wind angle and a specific apparent wind speed. So that really doesn't change much. It's really shape and size. And the faster you plan on going, the smaller and flatter you go. Watching some of the preliminary races, some of the teams are exceptionally fast in some conditions and not so fast. And because remember, they're limited to 8 sails total. So that's not very many sails. So there's going to be holes in the inventory. So someday you're going to see somebody on the race course, like I think Charlie or somebody said, sometimes you get passed by a boat going 7 or 8 knots faster and you think you're dialed in. You know, other times you're going 7 or 8 miles an hour faster than the same person that just... So there's going to be big holes in the inventory. It's who can manage those holes the best.
That's great insight, Kenny. Thank you. Now, I asked you about the Olympics, and I asked Simon Fisher last podcast whether he ever considered the Vendée Globe. So I've got to ask you too, has that ever been something you've harbored ideas about?
My stock and standard answer is I don't like myself that much. I there's some things I can do well. There's a lot of things I don't do well. And I've never been, you know, I always used to say from a Volvo standpoint, we never took anybody on board the boat who was just a fast sailer anymore, because you had to be an engineer, a carbon fiber specialist, a sail maker, an electrician, an electrical engineer. You had to rigor, you know, you had to have specialties outside of just sailing, because you needed to get from point A to point B. If you can't finish, you can't win. So the Vendée takes it a whole nother step further. You got that whole mix of specialties that I just mentioned, you know, diesel mechanic, you know, whatever the case may be. And I just never had the aptitude the aptitude to sink in that next level, that kind of engineering level. And don't get me wrong, these folks are engineers on these boats. You know, they are not just fast sailors. In fact, some of them would probably declare that they're engineers before they're sailors. So I just never had the gumption to get to that next level. And I've always enjoyed, you know, after doing 2.5 Volvos, it's hard to say that I didn't enjoy that part too, but I enjoy the coastal distance stuff, you know, the nooks and crannies, the sea breeze, the land breeze, the nuance of variability, let's call it. And to start off, I just don't like myself that much. I couldn't do it by myself. I drive myself crazy.
It's very honest, at least. It's very honest. Can you have a stab at the podium for this race? I mean, maybe not the order, but who do you think is going to be there?
I mean, there was a very clear kind of top four in those other races, top three or four, just from a boat speed standpoint. But then you got to throw in the new Quorum and of course Hugo Boss into the mix, and they're virtually unknowns. The new Hugo Boss is very different looking, and I think in talking to Juan, they're excited about it. Do they have enough time on the water? Who knows? And then same thing with Hugo Boss. The two boats that have been kind of off to the side training on their own, I'd say nobody, you know, probably people on the inside have a reasonable idea as to what to expect, but the rest of us are looking with wide eyes just like everybody else. So it's probably a five person grouping as to what those top three are. And then there's another five teams that keep in mind. I think one of the biggest things, Justin, is going to be who finishes with two foils, because, you know, even with the Volvo 70, we had a dagger board, a keel, and one rudder. We're in the water. So we had three blades, you know, three spokes of a comb going through the ocean, which we hit stuff all the time. I mean, you're hitting stuff. It's sharks, it's debris, it's sunfish, it's whatever. Whales, you know, there's just stuff out there. These boats are reliant to go so many knots faster with these foils that all of a sudden they're combing through the ocean. They literally, these boats look like a comb. And you know, it's one of the appealing things of the sea foil, which some of them have, that's still just kind of a knife edge going through the water there. Whereas these foils that go straight out flat, like a sideways surfboard, God, that's a large, large area of skimming on the surface where a lot of this debris is. That to me would be my biggest fear, is how to get around the world with my foils intact. So unfortunately, there's going to be a bit of a Russian roulette aspect to it in that way, as we all know, with all of our conservation side of things. And that Russian roulette can get others onto the podium or even a surprise win because of it, because you just, unfortunately, you just never know.
Yeah, I'm with you on that completely. Ken, let's move on to more familiar ground for you, the Ocean Race, or the Volvo Ocean Race as it was. A couple of questions about this, because the race is now going to be in 2022, the start. You and I had a great chat about the route a little while back when we thought the race was going to be starting at the end of next year. That seems all a little bit redundant right now. But I wanted to ask you about this. First of all, did you think the introduction of the Imoca 60s was a good move for the race?
Well, I think the race needed a little bump, little boost. It was either that or a handicapped class. You know, I was always kind of fascinated in more of a handicapped class, kind of old Whitbread style. but, you know, a lot of homework went into it, and I think there needed to be a little bump. And yeah, I kind of like where they are. They just got to figure out how to get more 60s interested in this, because it is a different, not only a different different style race than what these Imoca boats are built for, but I think a different budget, because it's these stopovers are not cheap.
Yeah, you wouldn't be surprised to see the old Hugo Boss boat racing in that, would you? I mean, you know.
No, I mean, Charlie just took off day before yesterday to head back across the pond again in that particular boat, and I think he's interested in gaining a training partner out of it, and so for somebody that could be a real nice potential, if that's still the direction he's thinking about, that could be a potential turnkey program where somebody not only gets probably a really good boat, but all the data that they have to date, and become an automatic tuning partner. So maybe maybe I'm his pitch man now, and I got to make sure I get a cut of this.
Absolutely. Yeah, because we could see. I mean, I know Boris Herman is very keen to do the race. His focus is now on the Vendée, obviously, but you wouldn't be surprised to see him put something together if he gets around the world in one piece with that boat. And several of the other boats, I think, are potential ocean race candidates, maybe not with the same skippers as they're with now. But
one big thing on this one, Justin, is I know they've vacillated back and forth between, are they going to use the smart autopilots or not? And the decision was made about a year ago not to use them, so it was going to become more of a driver's race. And I think they might be I don't know if the decision has been made yet. It may have already been made, and I'm not quite up to speed, but I think if they bring autopilots back in, potentially that kind of brings the French side of it back in a little bit more, because they have fully set up boats for that style sailing. And I think that's as big a deal as setting up your boat for four people versus just one, is the type of driving you're going to do. And by the way, then that, you know, I was just thinking about that, that completely relates to the type of crew you get. You know, if you got an autopilot that can probably steer as fast or faster than a human a fair chunk of the time, all of a sudden the style of crew member might change completely as well. So anyway, these are big decisions that have to be made, and if they haven't been made already, hopefully they're made shortly.
Would you be in favor of that, of smart auto helms?
Well, I haven't spent any time on these boats except for crawling around them, and I can't say that I really know enough. I know what other skippers have told me, and you know, Charlie. I think Charlie goes back and forth a little bit, and he's certainly the skipper that I'm closest to at this stage. So, yeah, I frankly really don't know enough.
Yeah, and I guess my other question was, how does it sit with you that just this reduction in the crew numbers? We're down to four, or if it's an all male team, it's four people on the boat. Do you think that is kind of fits in with the heritage of this race? And I know it's evolving and all of those good things, and I see why.
Well, don't
they're
forget
doing
about the 65s. You know, the 65s still have a decent sized crew. They're still working at getting young people on board. They're still looking at getting females on board. I mean, really, one of the primary announced boats is Bianca down in New Zealand and as a female skipper. So don't forget about 65s. I think the 65 class, who I've had a little bit of affiliation with, especially lately, is not only are we the exclusive sailmaker for this next race again, so we have a vested interest, but also a vested interest in the class in general. They're proven phenomenally good boats to do this race in and to keep that heritage that you're talking about, to keep the crew numbers up and you know, not quite as radical, but I certainly wouldn't call them off the pace either, as proven by the last race where drone footage finally proved that Volvo, or what were Volvo at the time, our Ocean Race sailors are trying to break their boat 24 hours a day. And God bless for the 65s that they showed us that just the intensity and the wildness of this race like we've never seen before. So I think between, if it was just the Amokas, the heritage of the race certainly feels a little more Vendée-ish than Volvo-ish. But the 65s grounds it, and don't forget about the 65s. There's some really talented teams coming together and a really talented class out there that's ready to put on a show again.
You raise a good point there, there are lots of teams, I think, lots of potential teams around the world. And I wanted just to touch on the idea of the ocean racing and in particular the ocean race in the US. I mean, we know that when the race comes to Newport, it gets a fantastic response because it's Newport and everybody gets it and everybody wants to be there and see the boats. And it was always the smartest audience that we ever had when we went around the world with those boats. But outside of that bubble, if you like, it never really seemed to get any acceptance in the wider sporting community. Do you think that's just a fact of life and it's not a ball sport and it's just kind of too bizarre for people? Or
here in the States, for sure. There's so much competition. Each city has its own competition. You know, in a city down south, college football might be by far and away the most popular sport. Whereas you go to Boston, essentially, it doesn't exist. So I think really each city and region has its own pros and cons to every sport. And around here, it's football, baseball, basketball, and hockey is probably a distant number four, but still a wildly popular sport. And you know, sailing just becomes a fringe sport, like it or not. So that's why you come to a place like Newport, or even when it came to Baltimore and Annapolis, you know, that was a really good stopover down there. The shame, you know, the sad stopover was the one that we won into way back when, into Miami. You know, and Florida just is a little, the weather's always so nice in Florida. I think people up here appreciate sailing more because we got a limited season. Down in Florida, it's like, yeah, we can go out, we can do this any day. So anyway, I think all countries are like that. I mean, certainly you go to Itajaí and that local region rallies around the race because it's an event, not even because it's sailing, because it's an event, right? Same thing when we went to China, same thing. It's pretty rare that you go to Auckland or let's say if it went to Sydney or something like that, where the whole country is sailing mad. I think that is that's not the rule. That's the other side of the coin. And Newport and the United States, I think, just kind of falls in where the rest of the areas in the world fall in when it comes to this question.
Well, one circuit that's trying to, break sailing out into the mainstream is SailGP. I don't want to talk too much about this. Just a couple of questions, but I just wondered what your perception of it was. I mean, you've been heavily involved with all the things we've talked about before. I'm not sure what involvement you've got with SailGP, but what, you know, how do you perceive it?
Yeah, I mean, not really much. I haven't had much to do with it. I'd say if I had the opportunity to kind of hop on and take a look at the video, I would do that, but really nothing more than, you know, a sailing fan from time to time. You know, one of the things I really hope with the next America's Cup is that these teams don't get so good at sailing them that they just pop out of the water and go all the time, that we see the nosedives and the inadvertent mistakes that we see. Sail GP has gotten so good that you pop out and you go, and it's, you know, it's boats just kind of cruising around the race course. And at least that's how it kind of looks from afar. Lord only knows that the athletes on board, it's a completely different show. It's a different deal. But I'm hoping, I think it's, and maybe this is my commentator's hat, but without mistakes, there's not much to talk about.
Yeah.
And I don't know, kind of felt like SailGP got to that place, that they're sailing the boat so good that, I don't know. Anyway, listen, like all events, I hope for the best. We need anything to promote sailing, but it just isn't one of them that's quite caught me yet, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair point. I think I feel pretty much the same, although I am quite excited that Pete Burling and Blair Took are going to be racing next season, if there is a season. Yep. I think that will put the cat amongst the pigeons a little bit and shake things up. So, America's Cup. First question is, are we going to hear your dulcet tones as commentator this time around?
Well, they're not going to sound as bad as I sound right now because I just had nose surgery, so I sound like I just ate a frog. So right now it looks like it, yes. We have to, Melissa and I are going to go down at this stage. We're planning on being down there around the 1st of December so we can spend our 14 days in jail like everybody else trying to enter New Zealand and join Leon and the whole television team yet again. And so, you know, Justin, it works so good with my job because, first of all, I can do my job from anywhere in the world, especially in today's day and age where we're spending more and more time at home. But it gives the Southern Hemisphere more attention, certainly phone time, more attention than they would get from me if I were up here. And it also keeps me amongst it with the best sailors in the world right now and with big owners and the super yachts all coming to town. And so as we talk about it internally, it's almost like I'd be there most of this time anyway. So I may as well be at least in the thick of it. And this puts me in the thick of it. And so it's really, I have to admit, I've really enjoyed it and in the past. And I look forward to having a run at it again. Yeah. But they have to promise that there will be mistakes, that we want to see, like the crash that American Magic did that first day out. We need those. We should almost write it into their contract. They need to do like three of those a race so we can get all excited per race. And it always happens at the beginning of the trials. There'll be far more excitement to talk about, to scream and yell about in the beginning of the trials than there will be towards the end where everybody gets exceptionally good. But you know what? We'll take that as it comes.
And have you got your head round yet the AC75s, these counterintuitive foiling monohulls?
Yeah. Well, I have my head around. You know, I've known Guillaume Verdier long enough that I remember him talking about a concept like this a long time ago. So, and he, amongst others, were quite integral in kind of creating this rule, this concept. So, I get the concept. I like to find out more about the nuance, about the detail that these guys are going through. You know, have your moles within each camp that can tell you the off the record little stories that make the overall picture look that much more fun and exciting. It's really, I'm interested. I haven't dove into the rules yet. You know, the rules are going to be much different. There's going to be upwind starts, whereas we've been reaching now for a couple cycles. And how are they going to handle? I know they're talking about different ways to be able to position the boat and distances and things like that with these bloody knife edges sticking out the sides of the boat and make sure that people don't get damaged that way. But there's a lot of rule stuff that I have to devour over the next couple months, and just kind of learn the ways, you know, and go for rides on the boats. That was always really important for me, is to be able to hop on each boat and figure out how the teams see for myself, feel it for myself. Until you can feel it for yourself, it's probably hard to talk about it. And so that part's super fun.
Have you managed to take a look at the three new, you know, the second generation boats from the three challenges? I mean, they're pretty surprising, I think, is probably the best description. Matt Sheehan did a great analysis of them, which
I actually saw Matt's analysis, and I would guess that each of the design teams are listening to, if they're listening to analysis, they're probably getting as big a chuckle as all of us are looking at the different boats and trying to decide why they did what they did. I love the media attempt at being sidewalk
smart. We're trying to be smart.
As I guess when I go to these events as part of the media, part of my job is to get on the inside and not try to hypothesize myself, but to try to get the engineers and the designers and the sailors to give me the real scoop as to what they were thinking. And by then it's too late anyway, so you may as well talk about these concepts and where you were going and why you were doing it. And every time there's a first round of a new boat in the America's Cup, it is wildly creative. So let's all just appreciate how creative it is, because guess what? One of these boats is going to be way faster than the others, and that's going to be the direction that it goes in from there, and they're going to get, it's like a TP52. They used to be some wide and some skinny. Now, you know, if one of them is 2 centimeters wider than another, it's a radical departure, you know. So let's appreciate this creativity while we got it, and realizing that the next cycle, they're all going to start narrowing down one path, most likely.
It's probably an unfair question. Are you getting any sort of feel from your friends, from your spies, from your contacts about who's fast and who's slow down there right now?
Well, for sure, there was all kinds of rumors abound with the first version boats. But like everybody said, you know, this one seems quick, this one seems slow, this one's good here, this one's good there. They're all following each other around, little. They have their little spy boats out there, but I think they all also realize we're kind of wasting our time until we get the second generation boats. So that's just starting to formulate. They're just starting to get going. And like any good program, I think these teams are smart enough not to draw conclusions yet, because probably all the cards aren't laid out on the table. And I think I heard like Dean Barker or somebody say, the learning curve on a new concept boat like this is so bloody steep that from one day to the next, there could be knots different, not tenths of a knot anymore, but several knots difference. So let's kind of let it shake out for a while before we draw a conclusion.
Well, Ken, I could carry on asking you questions. I have kind of started to run out of questions, but I could carry on for a while, but I know I should probably let you go and get on with the rest of your day. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate it. I think it's been a great conversation that the listeners will enjoy. And good luck down in New Zealand. Hopefully I'll see you down there. I'm also battling with the New Zealand government to try and get a way in. And we'll see whether that works out or not. But for now, Ken, thanks a million. And we'll speak to you again very soon.
Thanks, Justin. And thanks for all you do and everybody else out there who's creating these kind of fun entertainment pieces with people like me to kind of spout that, like we know what we're talking about. But I think in times where people are probably spending an inordinate amount of time in their homes rather than out on the water, anything that can be done to remind people of our sport and how much we enjoy it is probably a good thing. So thanks for everything you're doing as well.
Well, I appreciate that. And thanks for your support. That's it for this edition of the Yacht Racing Podcast. My thanks to my guest, Ken Reed, for taking part.
And thanks also to all of you for listening wherever you are around the world. I hope very much that you're all enjoying the podcast. And if you are, then please tell your sailing friends about it. And if you have a minute to give us a rating and leave us a comment, that will be very much appreciated too, as it really helps us grow our listenership. For more news, interviews and feature articles from the world of professional sailing, you can check out the Yacht Racing Life website at yachtracing.life. For now though, thanks again for listening, and until next time, I'll just say, sail fast, everyone.